let's maybe make a little mnemotechnic here so maybe we can remember this word in the future. Who's one of the most famous apsaras?
Urvasi.
Yeah, Urvasi. So this sounds like we were touching on something here about what makes her so attractive. Okay.
Interesting.
Loka Vritti Karahi.
Loka Vritti Karahi.
Means of livelihood.
Means of livelihood.
Means of livelihood.
So in the at the end of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it seems like Krishna hasn't given enough practical details. And so then I heard Prabhupada saying, yes, this is true. He's given general fame, but Arjuna hasn't got enough details to really understand it, to work on it. So in chapter 3, Prabhupada says, now Krishna is presenting professional devotional service, or vritti, he says. So profession means your profession, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. And loka, I guess, means all people. Vritti means your means of livelihood, your in terms of varna, ashram, dharma. And karahi, probably from karma, means doing. So by everybody can do their livelihood. And
Vibho.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
So I guess we're Anu and he's Vibho. Vaishaha. The mercantile community.
The mercantile community.
So this would be, I guess in grammar again, Vaishaha. Yeah, Vaishaha would be the nominative, the name. Like we're calling for Krishna, so we say Hare Krishna, the vocative form. But if it was this nominative, it would be Krishnaha, Ramaha. Tat.
Tat.
There.
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 The Vaishas. Udbhavaha.
Udbhavaha.
Orientation.
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 Vartam.
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 Means of living.
Means of living.
Means of living.
Nrinam.
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 Of all men.
Of all men.
Of all men.
Yaha.
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 One who.
One who.
One who.
And of course, I guess saha means me. Okay. Samavartayat.
Samavartayat.
Executed.
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 Let's go back here. Like we're going forward, like it or not. Okay. So, translation. The means of livelihood for all persons, namely production of grains and their distribution to the prajas, was generated from the thighs of the Lord's gigantic form. The mercantile men who take charge of such executions are called vaishyas. Please repeat. The means of livelihood.
The means of livelihood.
The means of livelihood.
Of all persons.
Of all persons.
Of all persons.
Namely, production of grains.
Namely, production
of grains.
And their distribution to the prajas.
And their distribution to the prajas.
Was generated from the thighs.
Was generated from the thighs.
From the thighs.
Of the Lord's gigantic form.
Of the Lord's gigantic form.
Gigantic form.
The mercantile men.
The mercantile men.
Mercantile men.
Who take charge of such execution.
Who take charge of such execution.
Are called vaishyas.
Are called vaishyas.
Are called vaishyas.
Maharaj, it looks like everybody's muted themselves, so maybe I shouldn't even mute.
Okay. So there's a fundamental principle of management, and that is, if it works, don't fix it. Okay, so rather than trying to systematically mute everybody here, yeah, we'll just hope everybody takes care of it. So right away, the kind of the perspective again, of course, it's always good to look at a little perspective. Otherwise, we forget what the verse is actually about. So we're in the third canto here. And Jiva Goswami identifies the Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam as Ete Chamsa Sakal Pumsam. Now, the Paribhasa Sutra is that text in the book which makes everything else make sense. It's kind of like a summary of the text, what we're trying to accomplish in the book. Like in the Nectar of Devotion, some people say it is, whatever it is, Anyabhilasita Shunyam Jnana Karmati Anabhitam. And it's just describing what is Uttama Bhakti. So in the Bhagavatam it is, Ete Chamsa Sakal Pumsam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, Indyari Vyakalam Lokam, Mridyanti Yuge Yuge. So others may not agree with this, but Jiva Goswami states this, and he's a pretty respected authority in terms of the Bhagavatam. Radhika Raman did a very, very nice seminar on the glories of the Bhagavatam at the ISKCON Silicon Valley temple there. And you can probably look it up on the internet, ISKCON Silicon Valley, and look for their classes and go back to him. It was Saturday before last. It's a 2-3 hour things. And pretty much the second 3 hours, he talks about specific verses from the Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami. I think he points out that the very first verse of the Bhagavatam actually covers the first 5 verses of the Vedanta Sutra. Okay, then going backwards, in the first like hour and a half of the first session, he talked about the general glories of the Bhagavatam from a perspective of somebody who's not an ISKCON devotee, a Gaudiya Vaishnava. And he's also establishing from that very clearly that it's just those who know the Bhagavatam, regular scholars, they glorify it. That it's in a class by itself. It's like the moon amongst the stars. And in so many ways he went on like that, which we've mentioned before. But he was giving some even more new details about it that we hadn't heard. So in general, the Bhagavatam is accepted as tremendous literature, and now it's just becoming known. It's just becoming known in terms of the whole world culture. And because it's Kali Yuga, we shouldn't expect that everybody's going to take it. Some people don't want to come out of the light, darkness. They want to stay in the darkness. They want to try and enjoy in a stupid fashion. So it's giving the opportunity. That's what Kali Yuga means. Okay. Then the other hand, those who want to come out, some of them, then the Bhagavatam is here, and it's becoming made available, and the more we can make it available all over the world, because now Prabhupada's put it in English, and different people are making, Radhika, for example, and Krishna Kshetra are making it accessible to the academic community, like that. And we're trying to do our part here. We like making these PowerPoint shows. You know, they're fun to look at, a little bit of illumination. So the first two cantos are Lotus Feet of Krishna, orientation, what's the purpose of this book, how is it being written. The idea is to go to Krishna as the source of all the avatars. So as we go through the Bhagavatam, it's going through different incarnations, different energies of Krishna. And finally in the 10th canto, if we follow the process and become purified, then we'll be able to see Krishna face to face, like that. You know? So it's a very intense process. So third canto, we've gone beyond the lotus feet of Krishna, 2.2.12. It says one should not dare to recite beyond the first two cantos as long as one is still engaged in gross illicit sex. Okay, so third canto is pretty intense, the description here. Third canto, first off, at the end of the second canto, the sages are asking, what did Maitreya and Vidura discuss? Because we know Maitreya heard from Uddhava and Krishna about Krishna's more advanced position in terms of his personal pastimes. He heard that. Krishna told that to Uddhava, and Maitreya heard it. And so we want to hear what Maitreya and Vidura discussed, because Maitreya probably explained it to Vidura. So the first four chapters is that meeting between Vidura and Maitreya, and beautiful recollection of the pastimes, and all of Krishna's pastimes by Uddhava. It's very nice just to read those and chant them. And of course, a very, very famous verse about, I can't remember whether it's actual Sanskrit, I'm sure Narahari remember it later on, like that. Aho bhakiyam stanakalakutam jagangsaya apayat apiyasadvi lebe gatim datri sasamuchitam kambadayalum, something or other. Yeah, okay. How can I take as master one more merciful than he who accepted a she-witch, Putana, who had smeared her breasts with poison, right, as a mother. That's pretty merciful. Krishna takes the least qualification and gives the greatest reward. So considering how I'm kind of struggling in devotional service and making it along here, then I can only accept that actually I'm not doing very well, because Krishna is taking the least qualification and giving the greatest reward. Okay. So then the third canto, we're coming to this little more advanced knowledge, you know. And so sure enough, Vidura does meet Maitreya. And actually all he should ask about is just Krishna's situation in Dwarka and these kind of things. We've already heard about Mahavishnu's relationship with Brahma, Shagarbhadaksha Vishnu's relationship with Brahma. That was in the end of the second canto. But that's Aishwarya Bhava, and also it's not even his relationship with Brahma's relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. It's right on the boundary, how Mahavishnu is creating this world. Okay. And many people, that's all they know about God. Many people, I think their idea of God is Mahavishnu. He creates the universe. Or more likely, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, how he creates this one universe. And Yamaraj, how he sends good people to heaven and bad people to hell, or something like that, you know. And so that's most ideas, Muslims, Christians. God is the cause of the universe, and he rewards you and punishes you materially if you're good or bad. No, okay. But Vidura didn't ask about that, because maybe he was feeling a little shy to approach these advanced questions. And Vidura is the same age as his father, like that, and Sai Maitreya, you know. And also probably other people from the ashram there, and also probably the several tip recorders going like that. So he was thinking, well, let me ask questions from that will benefit everybody. So first off, he asked this basic thing. Here we are in this world. We're looking out on Medical Center Parkway, and there's a red car going by, two silver cars. You may have noticed that I think like 90% of the cars around here are either black or white or silver or gray, black, white, or gray. And every now and again, some red, you know. That's about it. It's interesting, our culture, you know, black, white, gray. At least we can get some gray. Chakravarti Das, he was Hansududu's commander-in-chief there in Germany. So he told me one time, for Germans, there are basically two colors, black and white. And he said sometimes when they're feeling like a little bit, you know, cheerful, they'll add in red. So German mentality is things are black or white or sometimes red. But it seems we Americans can actually expand it here to include gray. We have to accept that some things aren't black or white, they're gray. But in terms of stepping back and getting different colors, I haven't seen another color car go by. Every single car has been, you can hear them, every single one, black, white, or gray. Okay, we got it blue, but it's so dark blue, we're going to call it black. Okay. So this is the world. This is where we are. So Vidura is asking these questions. Hey, you know, please tell me how God, the guy you're talking about, creates this world. Hey, where's this coming from? Pretty much everybody with some intelligence wants to figure out, you know, the history of something. A little child, he's asking, well, why is this? Why is this? What is the cause? What is the cause? What is the origin? What is the origin? You know, where does it come from? Because that determines, well, how things are, right? Where they're from. A dog has a memory of something like about 3 hours or something like that, maybe as a kind of basic short-term memory. And so he's kind of looking at the cause of things within the last 3 hours, pretty much, you know. He has to have some longer-term memory because he knows, like, who's the tough dogs in his area and who's, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know. But basically, he's also, even a dog is concerned with the cause of things, the background. So Maitreya asks, Vidura asks, how does God create this universe? And then also, how does he maintain it? And in the end, how does he destroy it, you know? So that's kind of it so far. Maybe he'll talk about later on. I don't think we even get to Krishna Loka. They kind of stop talking and maybe in the fifth canto, you know? And of course, this is being described by Sukadeva Goswami, the Maharaj Pariksit. Sudha's telling the sages about this conversation, but he's kind of, I guess, telling it as I heard it. You know, the same question was asked by Maharaj Pariksit to Sukadeva Goswami, and I heard that. So he's telling the story. So he's answering their question by telling what he heard from Sukadeva Goswami. But about the fifth canto, Vidura and Maitreya go their different directions. And as far as I know, they never really talk about Dwarka and so much like that. Something a little bit, maybe. Yeah. But in any case, and Sukadeva Goswami continues with it. So anyway, the first thing he describes, he'll talk about then, is called Sarga. Sarga. And Sarga is a creation by probably Mahavishnu or Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. It's a little confusing sometimes whether we're talking about Mahavishnu or Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, because basically it's the same person. You know, it's an expansion like that. Like somebody may talk to his wife in the morning in the bedroom, they're getting ready about confidential things, what's happening with the kids and this and that way growing up. And they come out at the breakfast table and their parents are there and the kids are there and the servants bringing breakfast. And they change their mood, how they talk to each other. Then he goes out and as a police officer, he's got his uniform on and maybe he sees his own daughter driving a little bit dangerously and has to pull her over. And there's another police officer in the car and he watches how his friend deals with this girl and gives her a ticket and she says, he says miss and she says officer. But he's looking at the whole thing, and his friend comes back, and he says, you know that girl, don't you? And the officer says, yeah, I know her. It's my daughter. and tonight when we get home, we're going to have a little more talking about her driving. And she knows it, you know. Okay, so in that role, he just acts like Officer Jones. But when he gets home, it's Daddy and Susie, yeah. And she may have got a $40 driving ticket for a little dangerous driving, but when she gets home, she may get a little bit more, chastisement, more intimate, but it's more personal. Okay. So Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, it's all pretty much, you might say, the same person. Whatever my fingers do, my arm knows, and my body knows. Okay. The minister of prisons, the prison warden, and the prison guards, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Shirodakshaya Vishnu. Okay, so Sarga means the creation by Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. They create time, space, matter, heat, cold, hot, soft, hard, smells, fragrances. They create brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras. They create the archetypal psychological, psychosocial elements. They create the archetypal psychosocial elements, which is what we're discussing right now. Man, woman, Vaishya, Shudra, Kshatriya, Speed Dharma, these are a part of the material world. We think it's us, but we become detached to realize, no, these are just automatic roles, and they play themselves out. Just like if you touch fire, it burns. Same way. Yeah. So we have these different archetypal roles. And also all the rules and regulations for living in the present and for getting out. Those are all given by Vishnu. So Visarga is the secondary creation by Brahma. Yeah, Sarga is a creation by the Purusha avatars. And then Brahma starts to take all this stuff and he starts to create the Manus. He creates mental children like Narada and Shiva and Atrimuni. And then they, the Manus, have a third creation. Because Sayambhuva Manu and his wife, Sarupa, they then get into biological reproduction. But it's at a very high level. They produce animals with, they produce daughters, and their daughters then combine with the rishis, which I guess maybe is a fourth level of creation. And that's when all the species come from. Snakes, animals with hooves, all the daughters are having these kind of children. It's really kind of kinky if you're into like necrophilia, pedophilia, homosexuality, pederasty, and now we're describing all these daughters of let's say their granddaughters or something of Manu are having sex with the bachelor sons of Brahma and having snakes for children and having hooved animals for children. But in the dream you can have this kind of thing. I've never personally done it myself. But I've had other kinds of dreams with my male body. And I'm sure the female body, you can also have really incredible dreams of having relations with a snake or something, having snakes for children. Okay, but that's the level we're talking about. in the dreams, we're accessing these things, no? And then that comes down into the gross level where we are, like steam becomes water, and water becomes ice. And I'm going to ask Bhakta Daniel right here, what is the liquid form of dry ice?
I don't know.
Say it louder.
I don't know.
There he goes, honest man doesn't know. The liquid form of dry ice is carbon dioxide. Yeah. What is the gaseous form of? Well, anyway, water is H2O, right? Dihydrous oxide, what we call water, and ice is dihydrous oxide, what we call it. But dry ice is frozen carbon dioxide. So it's an interesting thing. So vapor becomes water, and water becomes ice. Things in the celestial planets go down to the semi-demigod level, and the semi-demigod level, they come down to our level. And they're all connected. You can go vertically by different austerities and stuff like that. Okay. So anyway, that's kind of our perspective here now. And then now in the Virat Roop, we've been discussing different elements, different demigods. One thing I noticed, for example, is talking about the Virat Roop then got skin. So it was talking about that, but as far as I understand, there's two kinds of skin. Just like behind your retina, there's actually two sense organs. Ask Pastor Daniel, did you know that? Yeah, there's the rods and the cones. Yeah, see, they did it. And the rods, I think, respond to black and white. And the cones respond to color. And the cones are more good for detail perception, and the black rods are good for motion detection. So if you see, for example, you see a really incredible football play, a picture of it, guys in the air jumping the football and everything else, so many times they'll put it in black and white because then it makes you see the dynamics of it. But if you want to see something like, Calypso music group, from Jamaica, singing the Ugly Woman song on the Ed Sullivan show with colorful shirts and all this kind of stuff, then you go to color television because color television is good for picking up details like that and so on. So anyway, there's two kinds of skin. As far as we're understanding here, twak and charma. So you learn all kinds of far-out things in the Bhagavatam class. And it's discussing these, some here, other places also discusses them. So as we understand, what it's talking about is the structural skin, which I'm not sure which is which. You know, maybe that's the twak, which is the skin which holds all the stuff inside the bag. You know, the bag's got to hold in the intestines and all this kind of stuff, kidneys and everything else. Yeah, I discussed this with Nitya Gorasundar. He's my partner here, and he's a psychiatrist. We're discussing the intestines last night at dinner and everything else. It's a machine, so you got to have a bag, you know. So you got twak, okay, and that's the leather. Basically, we got a leather bag, you know, a leather bag holding it all in. And the charama, if I'm right there, is the sensory skin. That's the aspect, and it's like a different organ. And that's the organ which is feeling. And how does it feel? Okay, it responds to pressure. You can push a certain spot, you know, and that pressure then stimulates the nerves, right? And they then send the information along the nadis to the spine. The spine makes its own adjustment for whatever gets to your brain, fella. Then it gets to your brain, okay. The other one is the hairs, right? Yeah. Yeah, I'm pulling Bhakta Daniel's hairs now. If I take a pair of tweezers and pull one hair on Bhakta Daniel's arm, you know, he'll wake up and he'll say, what are you doing? You know, one hair. So you pull one blade of grass on the body of Mahavishnu and he knows it. What are you doing? Oh, it's just pulling up this grass. Hey, cut it out, you know. So every blade of grass in the body of Mahavishnu, he feels it, you know. And that, of course, stimulates the nerves and the charama. So that's kind of in terms of the general stuff we've been discussing so far. And now he's talking about, what do you call it? Varna Ashram Dharma. And we had a fantastic class by Narahariji yesterday. And yesterday was talking about the Kshatriyas. So I guess the day before was talking about the Brahmanas. And tomorrow we'll probably talk about the Shudras. So in terms of the actual text here, it says they're coming from the thighs. But we usually think they come from the stomach, that the Shudras are on the legs like that and so on. So it seems that we're going to get down to legs as being like the feet and the calves maybe like that, so on. It's interesting because in Spanish, how do you say, piernas? Yeah, when you're talking about feet, you use the word legs to be piernas, like that, so on. They also include the feet and the lower part as being kind of the same thing there. You wash your feet and your thighs and stuff when you become contaminated like that and stuff. I said with thighs and calves and stuff. Yeah. Okay. So the vaishyas here are being described on the thighs. Next slide. Prabhupada says, human society's means of living is clearly mentioned here as visha. This is the very first word in the purport, pretty much in the text, right? It's interesting because the means of livelihood is visha, which looks very much like the word, the credit card word for visa. That's interesting. Or agriculture, and the business of distributing agricultural products, which involves transport, banking, etc. So very clear idea of economy, which you can give such very, very nice, lectures in the university. You just know Prabhupada's books. Ah, such incredible. And read a little bit about Western economics and stuff, and you can give, classes I've done it, which was to suck right in. Big professors of economics, everything else, so on. So this is it. This is our idea. What is wealth? Land, which means grains, cows, which means milk, and brahmanas. So with those two things, with grains and milk, boy, you got everything there. You got, what do you call it? You got, apple pie. You got pizza. Cheese pizza. You got, bread and milk. Everything there. So this is the means of law, means of living, for human society. Okay. Industry is an artificial means of livelihood. Industry. And large scale industry, especially, is the source of all the problems of society. So we have the Russians were thinking about advancing with the Communist Party. So they had this symbol, which is composed of two things. Ask Dr. Daniel here. What are the two symbols for the Russian?
Sickle and hammer.
Yeah, the sickle and the hammer. So what did Prabhupada say about that, He said, we're in favor of the sickle. Yeah, we like that. It's a good idea. But he said, this hammer, I found it. It's a damn hammer. Is beating the life out of everybody. Yeah. So that's the thing. The Russians should have gone towards a rural basis. But here's the point, too, that can you do it? Where you have proper agriculture, where human beings are supposed to live, okay, you can live on an agricultural basis. But if you start going north into northern Germany and England, and also you start going to Moscow, where it's 50 below zero and your agricultural season is maybe like 4 months. I mean, you got to do everything. It's got to go from nothing to harvest and everything else within 4 months. I was in Russia. They told me, don't come any earlier than May, Maharaj. Even in May, it's cold for you foreigners, okay? In Russia, they say there's two winters, the white winter and the green winter, and that's Russia. So the green winter is May, June, July, August, okay, something like that. And when you go there, it's like nature knows what it's doing. The second it comes out of there, it just explodes, The ice and stuff melts and nature just pops out. It's just like it's like exploding green everywhere, everything else. So get to work. We only got like so-and-so. And everything has to be done very quickly. So maybe it is impossible. To have human civilization in those areas. Yeah. We actually can't have a human civilization where there's not palm trees. And so because of that, they have to have industrialization. And then maybe they can trade with human beings by making these more sophisticated items like that and so on, Yeah. So this is these societies, and we maybe accept this, But the world shouldn't be dominated by them. It should be dominated by the human civilizations in India, Ecuador, what else we got there, places like that, Yeah. So, Matipurna Vidyamaras told me, that when they developed, when they took over, Gandhi and everybody took over India, they were thinking to really make it a agrarian-based society. That was Gandhi's idea. But then apparently Nehru and others, as we hear it, they were pushing to develop the industrialization because they didn't want to be the president or prime minister of a third world country. They wanted to be prime ministers of first world countries with big highways and motor cars and high-rise hotels so they could sit on the 50th story of beautiful hotels with, you know, with a cell phone in every room and, you know, women on birth control pills and all the liquor you wanted and, you know, and the Lear jets to fly here and there while people below supported this. So they pushed this. And everybody was telling them, everybody, even the Americans, were saying, well, don't do this. Your strength is your villages. That's what you got to give the world. Have a beautiful village-based economy. Let everybody learn some simple, practical, basic skill that will never go out of fashion, how to maintain themselves based on the cows, the land, and the Brahmins. You know? So nobody would help them. And he said they got somebody from some Czechoslovakia or something. Some people came in, some communist country. And they didn't help them go to the industrialization. So they didn't have to, and that was a mistake. And that was probably says the source of all problems in society. In Bhagavad Gita also, the duties of the Vaishyas who are engaged in Visha are stated as cow protection, agriculture, and business. Okay, cow protection, agriculture, and business. And Prabhupada said the business should only be there to allow for us to exchange the grains and that kind of stuff. Because the milk has to be done locally, pretty much. Cheese at a distance, okay. But grains you can move around, and ghee you can move around. So that's the thing. So real vice, real banker means how much grains and ghee that he has under his control to a large degree. We have already discussed that the human being can safely depend on the cow and agricultural land for his livelihoods. Next slide. The exchange of produce by banking and transportation is a branch of this type of living. The Vaishyas are divided into many subsections. So, of course, the Bhagavatam doesn't do it, but Prabhupada's purport, she includes something here. Yeah, I guess maybe later on they do. They talk about at least the Brahmanas. In the seventh canto, we'll find more details. Then after that, Prabhupada recommends Parashara's Dharma Shastra, Manusamhita. Then we have Hitopadesh, Panchatantra. We have Bhishmadeva's instructions to Yudhisthira in the Shanti Parva of the Bhagavatam, which is about 100 pages, you know, to 35 pages, something like that, 135 pages at about 10-point type. Then beyond that, Prabhupada has so many Dharma Shastras, you know, other Dharma Shastras. And if we have to go into all these details, we can do it. But pretty much it seems that for devotees who read the Bhagavatam, everything else in terms of agricultural development is pretty intuitive. You can figure out when it's time to start something, what you have to do. And if you're a Brahmana, Vaishnava Brahmana, you know it's time to do this and that. And you look up maybe some local agricultural, you know, advice. You haven't got to dig into the Vedas and remote things like that, so on. Especially at the level of a Vaishya, things are pretty much going to be intuitive and stuff. It's not going to require high detailed Shastric knowledge, you know. Yeah. Okay. Some of them are called Kshetri, or landowners. Some are called Krishna, or tillers. Krishi, I think, means the cow. Some of them are called Tila, the Vanik, or grain raisers. And some are called Ganda, Vanik, or merchants and spices. And some are called Suvarna Varnik, or merchants in gold and banking. What Varna means color, right? Suvarna means good color. Yeah. All these things. And of course, spices, you add them properly to the food and it keeps you good health. And sometimes maybe you need special infusion of spices and things like that. You know? Yeah. And tillers. A Brahmana in a time of hardship or emergency can adopt, what's it called? Apadharma, can adopt the activities of a Vaishya. But he can't touch the plow. That makes him too sinful. And so the plow cuts the earth. And so it's a sinful activity. It's a violent activity. Disturbs many living entities there, maybe Bhumi herself. So a Brahmana, he can become a Vaishya, maybe like a landowner. And Prabhupada says the landowner, their job is then to give the land to different people, to put them to work, you know, tenants. And maybe he gets like 10% of the produce. They keep 90. The king gets another, you know, percentage. And he's supposed to keep peace amongst his tenants. So that kind of Vaishya is more like a higher class Vaishya, almost like a Kshatriya, you know, just keeping peace among his people there. Let's go on here. The Brahmanas, Prabhupada says, are the teachers and spiritual masters. The Kshatriyas protect the citizens from the hands of thieves and miscreants. So that can be internally, or sometimes it may be by foreign invasion, by thieves and miscreants, like that. Yeah, yeah. And the Vaishyas are in charge of production, and distribution. The Shudras, the unintelligent class of men, who cannot act independently in any of the above activities, are meant for serving the three higher classes, their livelihood. So talking something about this, as far as I understand from all my, you know, the psychological and the personality and occupational tests you get at the university for free. Comments from some good astrologers, my own experiences, the super soul, other people. My nature is Shudra, Brahmana. Okay. You get three modes times three modes, and it gives you 81 different possibilities. Okay. So ladies are ladies. Okay, but ladies are Kshatriya ladies, Vaishya Shudra ladies, Kshatriya, Brahmana ladies, yeah, and men. So somebody may be, what do you call him, a Shudra, Kshatriya. So what is he going to be? Maybe be in the military and maybe never rise beyond the basic level, which in America is private, for his entire career. Maybe you become private first class, okay, but that's it. Because he's a Shudra, Kshatriya. But everybody knows he's a Kshatriya. And he may be a very advanced devotee. And the biggest general may respect the guy because he knows this guy hasn't got the analytical intelligence to figure it out. This and that. But he's got the bravery of anybody in the army, maybe even better. And that's how you judge whether or not somebody's a Kshatriya, pretty much, if he's brave, you know, and he wants to get control of things. And he wants to protect others. So those three qualities in somebody, even a very simple guy, the biggest general in the army, may respect him, you know, as great Kshatriya. But he ends up in that position. Okay. So we find different qualifications. And the Shudras, they're meant to serve the higher castes. So that's why myself, I need some kind of shelter from different administrators. It's very natural for me, from different economic development people. Whenever I've been in Kshatriya or Vaishya positions, in many ways it's a catastrophe. I get out of it as soon as possible. In emergencies, people put me in those positions. I've been temple president in three different temples, and every single time people got me out of it as soon as they could. And while I was there, people tolerated and helped as much as they could so I could do the job, and the super soul helped a lot too. But everybody figured out this is not Hanuman Prashakswami's cup of tea. Get him out of here, you know. Okay. So next slide. See, I love to do these PowerPoint shows. This is how I think. I think with my hands. Like if you see the different colors. Maybe Doug is here. He knows it's not easy to do these things. The more simple they look, I mean, it's the more time and effort and the ability it takes to do them like that. Formerly, the Brahmanas were given all the necessities of life by their Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, because they had no time to spend making a living. Myself, I can get unlimited numbers of invitations to go places and to preach and talk to people and, you know, about their situation, their yachts, everything else. You know? And on the internet, I was getting 400 to 500 letters a month. With my blog now, I got it down to 150. But even still, it's just, you know, answering so many and good letters. One time, one disciple, she wrote from South America, it was many years ago. And she said, Maharaj, you know, I've been coming to temple now, and you know, I'm wherever we're, you know my past, my history. And I met a very nice boy. And Maharaj, I'm pregnant. Okay, we were associating and reading the Krishna book together. But okay, you know. And of course, this is a Catholic country many years ago. And he's really hesitant about marrying me, thinks it's not good for our spiritual life. And if I tell my father, he's going to kill me. I know, you know, we're Catholic, everything else. So all my friends have been telling me I should get an abortion. What do you think? So this is what, you know, the kind of letters I get. Okay, they're unimportant. No, these are life and death letters. So I told her this toy takes shelter of Krishna and let the guy know that this is it. That you're his wife and, you know, you don't have sex with the guys who aren't your husband. So as far as you're concerned, you're married to him, you know, and he's got to take care of you. And he can scream and he can yell, but basically he's caught. Prabhupada says that, you know. So anyway, and then don't worry, just, you know, go tell your father he loves you and just tell him what happened, you know. And it was how did you have the time being alone with a boy like this? Was your father watching after you? He said, well, no, he wasn't. He should have maybe kept a little more closer watch on me. There's a Shudra. He wants to be someone to keep charge of him. So anyway, she did it, and she went to her father, and she said he was angry about it, but in the end, he admitted that, you know, her situation wasn't really ideal for him. He had some responsibility in the thing, and was his daughter, and then the boy came and, you know, confronted his father-in-law and said, yeah, gulp, yeah, I'll take care of her. And the father-in-law said, okay, I'll help you, you know. And so Catholic family, broader understanding. They know how to live together, what to do more than we do in North America. So the whole family got involved and everything was taken care of. And now somewhere in this world, there's probably something like about this point, about a, I would say maybe about a 12-year-old boy was alive. If I hadn't answered that letter, that 12-year-old boy would have probably ended up somewhere. Who knows where, what they do, you know, which is terrible, this abortion, what happens. So anyway, this is the, I would say my experience as a brahmana. There's so much engagement, and especially here, discussing things confidentially. Guhyama kyati prachati. And beyond that, giving, receiving prasadam. You know, brahmana can make nice food, and by that, people become changed, their consciousness changes. And then giving and receiving gifts, and of course money and everything else. Because as a brahmana, you may get a lot. Basically, my karma, everything else, is I always get more money than I can deal with. It's just stuff comes to me, donations. It's like kind of like can't refuse it. But what do you do with all this stuff? You know. So because what do I need? I mean, if I'm really an outlandish sense gratification, maybe I need like $35 a month for my sense gratification at the supermarket. At this level, I've got it down to the point where my really intense sense gratification is frozen orange juice and crunchy peanut butter. Before, it was like Eagle brand condensed milk was there also haunting me, you know, sometimes, you know, milk sweets. But by now, basically, you know, sitting down, if I'm really kind of in Maya there or whatever, and also even that's the question, how much Maya it is, you know. So all this money coming in, then a brahmana, he knows what to do with it. You got money, give it to the brahmana. It's like putting the stuff in the kidneys or something. The kidneys purify it. They take out the good stuff, toss it back into the body, and the rest they dump out in the urine. They concentrate it and dump it out like that. So the brahmanas, in that sense, are kind of like the kidneys of the body. Give charity to the brahmanas, and whatever he gets before daytime, he distributes before nightfall. And he looks around. He knows what's going on. People talk to him confidentially. He's got good intelligence, rational thought. He talks to some people. You see somebody that needs some help just because of their, you know, medical situation. Something's going on. He needs somebody who's trying to start a school. He gives them some charity and stuff like that. He knows how much they need and not to give them too much. Like Narayana was talking yesterday. So by nightfall, the guy's, oh, God, got rid of that damn money. You know, have $5 in my pocket. One person, when Bruce Bassi, astrologer, he said, Hanuman Swami, you have such heavy sannyas karma, you're going to have $10 in your pocket your whole life. So looking at it with inflation, I allow myself to have $36 in my pocket, 120, 110, 105, and a 1. And everything else belongs to the Anjana Sutta Academy or the North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies. You know? Okay, so the Brahmanas were given all necessities of life by the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas because they had no time to spend making a living. The Vaishyas would collect taxes, the Kshatriyas from the Vaishyas, and the Shudras and the Shudras. But the Brahmanas were exempt from paying income tax or property tax. That's interesting. That system of human society was so nice that there were no political, social, or economic upheavals. The different castes or varna classifications are therefore essential for maintaining a peaceful human society. So for many, many years, I was working in the Berkeley Temple. I ended up liking this legal stuff and everything else. It's my nature. Basically, I was in Bonaprasth life. You know, my wife and I were trying to work out the thing, and finally she got remarried, you know, and so on for 6 years. And it was, and then pretty much I took sannyas after 10 years of being there and stuff. So it was really, I could see all the things I went through are exactly what's described in terms of like healthy, you know, varnashram situation and dealings like that. You know, so many things, you know. But yeah, the city was interesting because we don't pay income tax. We're a nonprofit, you know, tax exempt corporation, federal income tax. It also makes us exempt from state income tax. So United States of America, they have these church corporations which are exempt from income tax. Okay, now sales tax, they really waffled on that, because even if you're selling our books, it became a big deal. We can discuss in more details in California, involving, I guess, even millions of dollars on the issue of sales tax. Because even selling religious books, then the government now is acting sinful, and they want to dig their fingers into it. If you're engaged in non-related income, for example, if you have some land, and I think you rent it for a church has unused property, it can use it, it can rent it and not be charged income tax for it. But for example, when the Catholic group was making construction blocks, you know, the monks would go out and they would pour the cement and cast them and make construction blocks and then sell them. Well, that's non-related business income. So for that, you've got to pay. And they charge you that. Now, property tax was interesting. The temple was not taxable by the county, but our residential properties, they started taxing us and said, hey, these are also part of our church. Nobody lives there, but our full-time members who are following these principles and everything else. And they said, okay, the law is that even though they're following all your principles, unless they are a contemplative society, you know, then they got to pay property tax. So basically, if you're bhajanandis and you use that property for your bhajan, they won't charge you. But if you're going out doing sankirtan, they want a cut of your property tax, you know, for the people that are living there. In some ways, it's not unreasonable because they give us, you know, the good roads to do our sankirtan on. They give us all this kind of stuff we need, you know. So it's very practical, very interesting in terms of the relationships here. And you see, in the United States, it's still pretty good. Okay. This is not time for it, but then also we also added our slideshow here, Light of the Bhagavat, verse number 9. And that's a beautiful purport in the Varnashram. We started trying to collect an index on Varnashram and the Bhagavatam, because so much of the Bhagavatam is based upon Daivi Varnashram, how to connect these psychosocial circumstances in the service of Krishna. You can connect Krishna's energies, Bhumirapana Lobai, in the service of Krishna. But it seems it's easier to connect these psychosocial things, and they're more potent. Because if you start acting like a sannyasi and following that dharma in your society, supporting sannyasi is the ultimate goal, then it's very easy then to think about Krishna and chant Hare Krishna. So another very basic one, Light of the Bhagavat. Prabhupada wrote it for preaching, and he wrote it for preaching to a certain class of people who I resonate with. Chinese and Japanese people. I was born on Guam. In my last lifetime, I'm pretty sure I was a Chinese Mexican monk who the stork delivered to a white woman. So I've always felt like a Chinese Mexican monk trapped in a white man's body. So now you understand who I am. So at this point, we'll finish our madness. And now, if anybody has any questions, answers, or complaints, or donations, whatever. We're here. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Everyone is unmuted. If anybody has any questions or comments.
Okay. And notice we finished on time, by the way, you notice. That's because my father's side is from Austria. So I have this thing, you have to do everything on time. Even if it's stupid, I do it on time.
Hanuman Prashek Swami?
Yes, sir, Mr. California.
In the purport, it says that the Kshatriyas would collect taxes from the Vaishyas and the Sudras.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
The Sudras were not supposed to be given money because of their nature.
They were just given the necessities of life, including someplace to stay and all that. But as far as money, I thought they wouldn't receive it. So how would they be taxed? And it's actually the first time I've ever seen that. I thought only the Vaishyas were taxed. They supported the rest of the society.
So for our studio audience here, Buck and Daniel, who's a farmer, his parents have 250 acres like that. I'm going to ask him one question to fit in here. How many calories do you get from farmland?
That's 14 million.
14 million calories can be produced by his father growing corn and on 1 acre. 14 million calories. Now, if that goes to human beings through animal food, how much do the human beings get out of it?
About 1.6.
So that's what a Vaishya knows, you know. 10% of the food value reaches human beings when you have a non-vegetarian diet. Incredible. Okay, I had the same thought in the back of my mind, but you can't discuss everything. So it's nice to belong to an intelligent community here about the Shudras. And now that you're bringing it up, I agree with that. That's exactly that. They're not given any kind of money, everything else. But listening to Narahari's, presentation about his very wonderful Shudra, you know, family member there, that guy pays taxes, doesn't he? I mean, maybe he doesn't pay income tax, but he pays sales tax. He pays sales tax. When he goes out and buys his bottle of Coca-Cola,
yes,
his bag of, you know, potato chips to sit with his friends and watch television, and buy, he pays sales tax, right? So they're collecting it,
yes,
you know, from the Shudras also in terms of how much pocket money they're given to supply services back to them and stuff like that.
Mosh, where did the term Daivi Varnashram come from?
It's in the purport. I think, where is it? One of the most basic texts is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, ninth chapter, instructions by Bhishmadev. And about text number 32 or something, and that's where Prabhupada says that Bhishmadev then instructed Yudhisthira on Varnashram, and he gives like this two verses about what he did. But in the purports, then Prabhupada expands it out, taking it from the Shantiparva. And those two purports are just like incredible. You know, intense, pure, wonderful summary of all of our Varnashram. They should be printed as a separate pamphlet, you know. But there I think Prabhupada uses the term Daivi Varnashram. And I've seen it other places. And as far as I understand it, Bhaktisiddhanta was using it. So it may have originated with him, or may have even originated with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, or somebody else.
Nice.
Yeah. What is the purpose of the Varnashram is Daivi. And we're using it for divine purposes when we're using it for Sankirtan. We're using the Varnashram system for Sankirtan.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, thank you. You were saying, I mean, I know you like to go through different cantos and you give brief summary of different cantos, and then you said, we come to the 10th canto, where in the pages of the Bhagavatam we can see Krishna face to face. Yesterday I was listening to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's amazing seminar. It was 3 hours long at Silicon Valley, and he's giving a seminar on gems from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like,
I mentioned that during the class twice.
Oh, yes. Yeah?
It is parrot? Yeah, I mentioned it twice during the class, and I gave some citations from it. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was amazing how he mentioned that Srila Prabhupada mentions this, seeing Krishna on the pages of Bhagavatam, face-to-face on the pages of Bhagavatam, but actually in the beginning of the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the sages are discussing, and Sukadeva Goswami is imparting the knowledge to Parikshit. Where's the question of pages? He mentions 3 times. Where's the pages? Where's the pages? So then he answers it by saying it's Srila Prabhupada's genius that he actually visualized all these books, where there would be books because it's Kali Yuga and things have to be written. So he said that's why he's mentioning in the pages. Because before
pages
that,
of Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not.
Of course, they have pages made of banana leaves also.
But it wasn't written down then. It's just for Kali Yuga people that
Prabhupada
went through the trouble. Plus, also, like, it's not at the end only, at the 10th canto. Krishna should be seen everywhere, no? In the beginning, I know you are saying, you say it's mostly we start off with the lotus feet that they are described. But looking at Queen Kuti's prayer, you know, she's talking directly to Krishna. So when we memorize those prayers, wouldn't we, if we come to that some kind of understanding, then maybe we can see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam?
No, in the, what do you call it? In the, I'm going to mix my mic with you, yeah. If we, that prayer, Krishna Svadham Ubhagate, in the purport, Prabhupada says that Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are identical. One who can see Krishna, one who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can see Krishna directly. So the first two cantos, that's direct perception of Krishna's lotus feet. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to hear from you.
My understanding, when the Bhagavatam is recited, as well as when the sages were assembled at Naimisharanya, that there were, you know, the most elevated sages from throughout the universe since the beginning of time. Narada Muni, for example, was present at when the Bhagavatam was spoken. I mean, he'd been preaching since Satya Yuga, his disciples, Prahlad and so many others. But at the same time, that there were many other classes of men who heard from Sutta Goswami as well as Sukadeva Goswami, who were not necessarily pure devotees and as exalted. And though we say that the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projitakaitavara Paramo Niramatsaranam Satam, is written for those who have completely given up all fruitive desire, for the one who's completely pure at heart. But really, it was also written for all stages of men who, you know, had an open mind and an open heart. So some that were reading in the Bhagavatam from the very beginning, they're seeing every aspect of Krishna. Those pure devotees, they're seeing this Krishna dripping off of every page and every word. But impersonalists who were present and others, they were gradually starting at the lotus feet. So there's all different stages of people that hear the Bhagavatam. It's really meant for all that had that open mind and open heart.
It's like we were mentioning our friend, what's his name, Bhakta Bill. And he was an alcoholic. He was sitting through the Bhagavatam classes for 1 year, the Sunday feast classes. Shinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. And he was simple life, alcoholic life. But they said after listening for 1 year, he began to be able to hear. It's like you're saying, even animals, right? Yeah, get benefit by having Bhagavatam recited.
Yes.
Even animals like us.
Oh, and also wanted to mention that regarding Sudras and other Varnas, just as there are divisions in ashrams, you know, you have four different divisions, even in Sannyas, Kutichak and Baudak and Paramahansa, like that. So similarly, even in the Varnas, there are further divisions. So just like we have the example from when Krishna plays water sports with the wives in Dwarka, it's mentioned specifically that the jewelry and clothes were given to the servants. So yeah,
to the artists and musicians, they got those. As that's how Prabhupada said when he was a child, every 2 weeks they would have new clothes, new dhoti, new kurta. And he said the people that were spinning and weaving and that kind of stuff, they wouldn't charge too much. So it was very practical that they would have all. And he said sometimes the men, maybe not every 2 weeks, the ladies and children, he said always, they would have like fresh cloth. And so it was like they would be passed down to all the servants and stuff, different people in the household. And they liked it, you know, some potency. And so basically you're getting a sari or something which has been basically worn, you know, during 2 weeks. And so how old is it? Yeah, but that's how the economy was, that, you know, there were many, many things were being passed on, distributed, and people weren't seething with anger and envy that, why don't I get new clothes? They were actually feeling, you know, this is a nice thing and stuff, you know, and the person who's giving it to me actually has the qualities I would like to assume. I don't want to take up the job of my mistress. Oh, my gosh, she has such headaches. I'm happy just, you know, being here, you know.
We have Chakori
Radha
Prabhu. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We would like to ask a question about Varna Ashram.
Okay.
So we are trying to open a girl guru pool in Vrindavan, which is kind of controversial because one part, which is a big part of the devotees, said that Prabhupada never wanted this to happen. In the scriptures it said also that according to Vashram, women are completely outside of it. And where are we standing? Because some people think that women should not have education, or at least academical education, but in another part, like today we were reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya was asking his mother to stop eating grains and Ekadasi, which was something that women were not supposed to be doing Ekadasi, but Lord Chaitanya asked women to do it, his mother. Well, thinking about all these things, where do we stand?
Okay, thank you very much. For everybody's information, Chakori Radha has been living in Vrindavan. She's from Chile. For how many years have you been there?
5.
5 years. So that's only with Krishna's permission. Okay. So now the question about practically implementing Varnashram Dharma in the Kali Yuga. So to answer that, what I can quote is, again, it's the instructions by Bhishma Dev. Those are, to my mind, the greatest summary of everything, the basic principles that we have in all of Prabhupada's books. And it's in the 9th chapter, 1st canto, instructions by Bhishma Dev to Yudhisthira. And there, probably in the purports, he's extracting, and I think you can act, he said, he recommends then those instructions in the original form, which are in the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata. And again, it's about 135 pages in the Ganguly translation. So we have so much information, you know, about how to do these things. So much. I would say compared to Vastu and astrology and all this kind of stuff, the Danda Veda, political science, is where we have the most information. We can start right away. If anybody wants to come here to me and ask me, how should we run the civilization? I can give them what I would think very, you know, Shastra-based sound advice about how to go ahead. We got it. We're not bluffing, you know. So there, Prabhupada says the Brahmanas, they're the people who should guide the Kshatriyas, temple presidents, temple board, all this kind of people, devotees, in terms of implementing these things and applying them based upon the scriptures, based upon stories. Okay, they know. So he's studying these things. And he says, therefore, the Brahmanas should be well-versed in scriptures such as Manu Samhita, and Parasura's Dharma Shastra. So finding Parasura's Dharma Shastra, it says that Parasura's Dharma Shastra is for Kali Yuga. It appears that Manu Samhita is more like, you know, for Dwapara Yuga, very intense, you know, rewards and punishments and so on. So maybe we'll be able to apply it in detail in the future. But Parasura is for Kali Yuga. And he says, in the beginning, he says, thieves are conquering kings. You find that different gangs in different cities have more control than the police, you know, so on like that. And people are afraid of them. They bow to them because the police can't protect them. Thieves are conquering kings. Maidens, unmarried girls, are becoming mothers. and women are conquering men. This is invariably what happens in the third age, the fourth age, the Kali Yuga, like that. It's very interesting. You know? So then Parashara says, okay, this is Kali Yuga, Baba, and here are some things. So other yugas, for a wife whose husband takes sannyas or dies or this and that, then she should follow her departed Lord in the same fire of sacrifice. Like Vishnupriya, she should chant, you know, get one grain of rice for every Maha Mantra she chants. She should follow Lord Chaitanya like a sannyasini and in her own way. Or if the husband dies, she should enter into the fire after him. Parasa says, in Kali Yuga, yeah, this is first class, but it's not the only option in Kali Yuga. He says, second class is for her not to get remarried, but to enjoy life. Third class is for her to get remarried after 6 years. And that's still Dharma. So I saw myself. It's practical. It works. It's purifying. So he gives these different like suggestions in terms about education for this and that and all this kind of stuff. But he says this is Kali Yuga. And it's so messed up that I cannot possibly give you, rules and regulations for every situation. So in light, if you haven't got exact rules and regulations, and of course you can go through a lot of it, maybe not a good forum here for this specific question, but there's so many sources you can find in Prabhupada's books, and the first two cantos, just look there, you know, for references. You know, basic things are there, and at least you won't make any big mistakes, okay? Then after that, he says, if you can't find exact things, he says, then you can consult one sadhaka, totally dedicated to spiritual life. So it's exactly what we would do in terms of these practical things. We would go to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, what should be the standard? How do we do this and that? And Prabhupada sometimes would take a little time to contemplate and get back to people, or he would say, no, like this, like that. You know. But he says, in the absence of such a person, a synod of six brahmanas can come to the same conclusion. So basically do that. You just talk to nice devotees, you know, maybe at least six of them. You find what you can find in Prabhupada's books, you know, and then finally you're chanting Hare Krishna. So you get inspiration from Sankirtan, from Kirtan, from Japa, those three things: God, Brahmanas, and Vedic scriptures. And then even if you have to kill 640 million people to establish your girls' Gurukula, it'll be okay, like that. So those things. To keep looking through Prabhupada's books. And everywhere, anywhere, but especially first two cantos are very nice, you know. And then have a nice association of devotees discussing it, everything else, even writing down and signing it, what their conclusions are. And then finally, you chant Hare Krishna, you know, follow the process, do Sankirtan Yajna, you should have good inspiration. And then even if you make a mistake and you go to hell, you have Prabhupada's books, your bead bag, kartals, and six devotees with you. So it'll be okay. So it's our suggestion, because practically speaking, you know, it's really messed up, and maybe we do need a girls' school, but maybe it should be much more oriented towards the mothers being involved, and the families being involved, as opposed to the boys' school, which maybe more is like a teaching board and that kind of stuff. And maybe the curriculum may be, of course, definitely adjusted, you know, and a lot of things like that. So I wouldn't say that it's wrong, but getting the right perspective on it, everything else, then I would say it probably has to be adjusted and maybe a different kind of school. So I guess maybe we should go now. It's 12:24. And because we are German, everything on time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all, everybody, very much.
Thank you, Mother.
Hare Krishna.
Sorry
to
have heard
Joy. Yeah. Oh, God, it's the problem.
I want one last comment here, because you're Ramananda's in California. Do you know why California is like a breakfast cereal?
I'd have to think about that one for a while.
Because when you get rid of the fruits and flakes, all you got left is a bunch of nuts.
Ah,
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Fruits and flakes. No, fruits and flakes. Another word for homeless.